Welcome to Layers, a podcast about style, women, and how we get dressed, from Anna Kinsella and me, Stevie Mackenzie Smith. This episode's theme is encounters.
In keeping with our theme for this episode, we're going to bring you a selection of brief encounters.
The last time I told a stranger I liked what they were wearing was like, last week sometime. There was a girl working at a cafe with a really cool yellow top on, and so I told her then. And actually the week before, I was in a similar area of London as well. Some stranger came up and told me she liked my scarf.
I wish I told strangers I like what they were wearing more, because I'm often staring at them and thinking I love their outfit and probably just freaking them out. And I think if I made that next step and told them, I would look less weird and they would feel maybe happier.
So there was an incident, perhaps it was last summer, perhaps it was some before that. I was on the top deck of a bus and there was this woman on the phone, and I thought that she looked so wonderful. She had these gold hoops and all of these kind of gold moments going on in her ears, and she was wearing what looked like a bikini top with a string vest over it and these neon kind of fluoro nails and these kind of low slung bleached jeans, and I just thought that she looked wonderful. And so when I was getting off the bus, I tapped her on the shoulder, and she had all of these wonderful tattoos as well. And I tapped her on the shoulder and I said, "I think you look fabulous." And she kind of looked at me as though I was, you know, a creep, basically. And I kind of ran off the bus.
Last weekend, I was in a vintage shop and the assistant in there looked incredible. She was wearing a long green skirt and red cardigan, and everything was so well put together, and she looked like a strawberry in a really good way.
So the last time I told someone how much I liked their look was yesterday. I was in H&M and I was trying on this outrageous baby blue fur coat, and I would have bought it, but it was so heavy. And this woman came along and she had a leopard skin print fur coat on, and she had chopsticks in her hair, and she would have been in her 60s. She had her hair all scraped back with a bun with chopsticks in, and she was really smiling at me in my blue fur coat. I was really smiling at her, and I was like, "Check you out." And she was going, "Check you out." And then I said, "I'd really love this coat, but I think it's too heavy." I took it off and I got her to carry it, and she nearly fell over. So I was like, "I'm not getting it."
Most days. I think I tell someone that every single day.
Anna, do you compliment people often on the street?
Not as much as I'd like to, I think. I tend to be a very observant person when it comes to clothes and strangers. I quite like people watching and that sort of thing. But I'm also quite shy and slightly afraid of everything. So I think a lot of the time I'd keep my well-intentioned compliments to myself. But this year, one of my resolutions is to be kinder. So hopefully I'll start actually saying these compliments aloud more often. What about you?
I like to compliment strangers, but I definitely have to build up the courage before I approach them. Mm. And I don't approach them all the time. Sometimes there'll be moments where I'll watch someone step off the tube or, you know, walk out of a cafe and think, "Damn, I wish I'd asked them about their jacket." But I'm always inspired by how brazen New Yorkers are with their compliments. And I think I'd like to be more like that. Once I was in New York and I had four different women tell me that they loved my dress during the period of about 20 minutes as I was walking down the streets, which felt like a lot. And also, I just felt really, really good afterwards. And I think that maybe here in the UK, it feels like people don't want to be seen to be acknowledging what other people are wearing. And we're more coy, and maybe we even withhold our compliments in a way that I think it's just nice to be open and more honest.
Yeah, I agree. And you're definitely right about there being like a Atlantic divide, I think. Especially in New York, it's the place I've been more complimented by strangers on the street than anywhere else.
Yeah.
I wonder what we could do to make London a bit more like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe some people, and I think I found myself doing this as well, maybe we're just all a bit too concerned with being cool.
Mm.
But it's interesting because you write your London Review of Looks newsletter, and I wonder what would happen if you started approaching people. Would that change the dynamic with which you're able to sort of quietly people watch?
Yeah, I think it would make me too present in the situation.
Mm.
That would be my fear. But maybe there's a way to combine it a little bit better. Stop worrying so much about being cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anna, Hannah, can you start by addressing your very coy tweet about finding an amazing charity shop that you won't tell anybody about?
You're right. It goes against the spirit of charity shops to be mean about the specifics of the charity shop. So I will tell everyone about this amazing charity shop. I was in Chelsea at the weekend and I went to this charity shop I've been to before, which is the British Red Cross just off the King's Road. I think it's Old Church Street. And they were having a half price sale on everything in store. And I mean, everything was designer and vintage. Like they had like Lanvin ball gowns and like Hermes suits and like Jill Sander and beautiful trousers. They had like McQueen trousers, like with buckles and kind of like a pirate trouser from the 2008 show, like from the actual show. Like they had the tag in it. Oh my gosh. Obviously they didn't fit me, but I could look. So it came down. My personal choice was between two garments. Like a classic kind of very 90s Prada, not pencil skirt, but like fitted narrow knee-length skirt.
Yeah.
And then like a tomato red plissé, kind of like that Issey Miyake pleats, please. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the designer. High-necked, long sleeve top. And like they're very different garments and they definitely appealed to two different sides of me. And I couldn't afford to buy both because I have a tax bill. And I went with the Prada skirt, I will say.
Are you happy with your decision?
I have one of my style inspirations for this season is Catherine Keener's character in Being John Malkovich, which is that like really 90s Prada kind of look, like very simple separates and like kind of sexy but really elegant. And this Prada skirt definitely plays into my image of that,
I think. That's so exciting. Especially after what we were saying in the last episode about like charity shopping, and I was saying that I'm just never the sort of person that ever finds Prada. I can't believe you've done it.
There was so much of it. Now, I mean, it wasn't dirt cheap. Like this was 45 quid, so you're not going to get the kind of bargains you can resell on eBay, which again, I think goes against the spirit of the charity shop.
Mm.
But still, while they have a half price sale, I would highly recommend it.
I wonder if it's still on.
I hope so.
Yeah.
They had a lot of stock, so I'd say so.
Also, I really like the idea of a tomato red top. Now you've said that. Just tomato as a colour in general.
I wish I had bought it. I could be wearing it right now, but alas.
Hey, it's important to pay your taxes and, you know, eat.
Stevie, what about you?
So this week I bought a pair of white cowboy boots.
Oh my God!
Which I have bought online. So they haven't turned up and I'm yet to discover whether my fantasy will pay off. They're actually from Topshop and I haven't bought anything from Topshop for ages. They're sort of ankle length. And they're a nice mix of obviously Western looking, but they're not too embellished.
Mm.
So they've almost got the simplicity of a Cuban heel. So yes. I'm really excited for them to arrive and I really hope they work.
First of all, I'm so happy for you. I just think this is great personal news. But second of all, I have to ask, are you worried about them getting dirty in London's polluted streets?
Yeah, I think maybe I haven't really thought about that too much. I mean, as you know, I wear a lot of white these days. So, I guess maybe I just need to move to, like, I don't know,
a cleaner Nevada? City. Maybe Scandinavia.
Yeah, or just maybe New Mexico and just allow them to rough up a little bit with a bit of sand.
Yes, yeah. Or you could just never leave the house again.
Yeah, that might just stand in front of a mirror looking at myself.
I wouldn't blame you.
I will update you when they arrive, which I think is about 2 days' time.
Please do.
Yeah. This is the second time we've met.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time we met was, I think, a Friday afternoon. We were at Quo Vadis, which is a restaurant and a members club on Dean Street. And you were sitting next to me having a really delicious looking lunch.
I was. A lovely piece of lamb. Nice glass of red wine.
And there was a sausage dog, which belonged to neither of us, which was sitting at your feet.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. It's sort of a bit like St. Francis. The animals were sort of attracted to me, as it were.
And I must be honest, I was writing in my black journal and you turned to me and said, oh, what, do you mind if I ask what you're writing?
Yes.
And I thought, oh, it's going to be one of those men who comes up to me in cafes and asks me what I'm writing. And the thing I wonder is if maybe my first impression of you might have been different if you hadn't been wearing the item of clothing that you wear for work normally that you're wearing right now.
Indeed. So I was just sort of having a nice lunch. My friend went to the loo and I saw you were writing in a journal and I do lots of writing. So I just initiated a conversation, sort of not thinking much about it. We had a bit of a chat and then I think the conversation definitely changed when you realised that I was a priest.
Mm.
So I am a priest in the Church of England. Part of my uniform is to wear
all black and a quite a distinctive white collar. And I'd taken that off, put it on the table. Now, I would be interested to know what you thought the dynamics were before and what you thought afterwards.
Yeah, it sounds quite negative, and it's a shame in a way to think that I had a kind of a preconception about being bothered by somebody. But I guess that's just because that's what happens a lot in normal life. We were talking about writing and you were talking about reading lots and taking notes. And then it turned into a conversation where you were referencing theology and you said, oh, well, I'm a priest. And you turned around and on the pile of your coats was an actual dog collar. And I hadn't believed you because I think my first assumption was this is a TV media type in Soho having a whiny lunch. Yeah. And so you saying I'm a priest, I almost needed to see the dog collar to know that was true.
Part of my job and part of the reason why I wear such distinct clothes is you initiate conversations with people, you know, you talk to them, and I just do that sort of naturally. And when my taxi light isn't on, as it were, when I haven't got the collar on, I sort of forget that. Mm. When you wear what I wear day to day, you assume a kind of almost a different position in terms of how people perceive you. And the primary way of signalling that is through what you're wearing. You know, that's the initial kind of introduction, as it were. So you sort of saw part of who I was without the distinction of what I was wearing.
When you get up in the mornings, do you always put on the collar?
Mm. So I'm one of those priests who, when I'm not working, I don't wear it.
Yeah.
And that's a signal for me. You know, it's not that I'm absolutely wedded to it all the time, but when I am working, it helps me sort of remember the sort of office and the history and everything behind what I represent when I wear that. You know, I put it on and I think, you know, okay, like you take on a different role to just being Michael Robinson. Mm. You become, you know, what people call your father. One of the things that surprised me most when I was first ordained is the number of people that stop you in the street when you wear, you know, a dog collar and just tell you stuff, you know, about their life, you know, because what you're wearing signals to people that, you know, you represent something else.
Yeah, so it's like a permission to be open, and that can actually be quite liberating for other people to know that they can maybe tell you things that they otherwise wouldn't, a stranger on the street.
I like to think so, and I think that's why I have decided to continue to wear it, because it's more helpful than it is perhaps a hindrance.
When were you first ordained?
So I was ordained in 2016, so I'm only a year and a half into this.
And that's when you first started wearing all of your work wear, I guess I'll call it, really recently. So what was that like to begin with?
Well, to begin with, you're really self-conscious. You know, I'm thinking, God, everybody's looking at me. But you soon realise that, you know, actually no one pays a huge amount of attention, or if they do, they soon move away. If it does resonate with people, you know, they stop you. When you wear the distinct clothes of a priest, you know, you're taking on a much bigger role than yourself. You know, it's not about yourself. The idea is they suppress the personality of the wearer, that you represent something much greater than yourself. So you're going to look distinct, and people want to ensure that a priest is dressed, you know, really in a really special, holy, sacred way. So that's the main church.
Yeah.
So this is the.
Have a look
at this for a second. So this is the. This is the
vestry
where we keep our
outfits. Oh my gosh,
some really lovely stuff. So some modern stuff. So this is like this is out from last night, but this is almost my day-to-day wear, this cassock. But as a kind of symbol of office, if I wear this out and about or go to the pub in this, like that, like, really catches people's attention.
Because it's
It's so long. It's distinct. Like a real robe.
It's a dress.
Floor length black dress.
And with 39 buttons, one for each article of religion in the Church of England.
Because it's quite simple in terms of how it looks, but would that be seen as being like too powerful a robe to wear to the pub?
I think it's how you wear it. So I wear it with, it empowers me, it gives me lots of confidence. It's really distinct, like it's like slightly ridiculous in what it is in some ways. But because it's so distinct, it's a bit like walking a dog or having a classic car. Like, it allows people to ask you a question without kind of breaking social norms of just talking to a random person. You know, they're like, oh, hello, Vicar. Like, you're really distinct.
Stevie, did you learn anything from your conversation with Father Michael?
I think I really enjoyed speaking to somebody who has a uniform that's about clearly identifying themselves in order to be more accessible within a community. I suppose I haven't thought much before about wearing clothes that help you to become more approachable to other people. Mm. Also, I just wasn't expecting to have so much fun hanging out with, you know, a reverend. Lucy, our producer, and I just had a lot of fun. And he actually ended up taking us into the vestry and we were both allowed to try on a garment, which I think is the sort of thing that people who aren't within the clergy are allowed to wear. We did check that with him. But it was this really incredible, well, yeah, it's called a cope. And it was red and had bits of gold kind of trim on it. And yeah, that was quite a special, funny moment.
Will you share some pictures of these?
I am definitely pictures. I mean, even after going there, I was like sending my parents and my boyfriend and everyone I know pictures. Like,
updating
what do you think?
Your Facebook
yeah,
profile.
New career. Yeah. And also the church, which is St. Peter's, just off the Woolworth Road in South London, is very, very beautiful. And it was designed by Sir John Soane's. And on the day we went there, it was just gloriously sunny. And this was around Christmas time when we visited. So all of the children were singing carols and it felt like quite a magic morning. Wow. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I met Marion the first week. It was, you know, maybe 2 days of having moved to Dublin. And I'm from a really, really small village. I'm actually not from a village. I'm from a townland, which is between two villages. So the middle of nowhere. And so moving to Dublin and moving to like the big city, the big smoke, was a big deal for me. And I was a little bit overwhelmed, I think, by Dublin, which I thought was very sophisticated. And you know, everything was big and noisy and... I think I was walking around Dublin looking at different things and then I saw Ginny Vander. Ginny Vander is, it's like a cacophony of fabric. So you just see like sequin ball gowns and like Edwardian lace and like the felt fabric of like a 1950s hat and like it's just incredible. And I think I was drawn to it like a magpie to something shiny, and I was just immediately drawn in. You know, I definitely think I first felt a little bit out of my depth, a little bit. But then I got talking to Marion and she allayed any fears I had of not fitting into the shop. She started asking me some questions about, like, was I new to the city and where was I from and what was I studying, and lots of really nice, like, easy questions like that for me. And then we ended up talking about, at the time, and I still do have a huge interest in fashion. And because Ginny Vander is the type of place where you can, you know, there are Victorian blouses that you can buy in there. There are, you know, Edwardian tea dresses. There are, like, you know, original flapper dresses from the 20s. I mean, it's an incredible archive of clothes as well. And all clothes that you can just, like, buy. Like, it's not a museum piece. These are things to be worn and to be used. You know, we were talking about that and I was obviously amazed and looking at everything. And then I suppose we ended up talking about, like, my life as well, you know, a little bit. That was around 11 years ago because I'm now 30. I've been going there for 11 years. And it's been interesting to see how, I suppose, the conversations I've had with Marion have evolved and have changed. Marion would be, she would be a different generation, a slightly older generation. And so she has a lot of life experience that I don't have. She's also like an incredibly calm and like gracious and graceful person. Whereas I think when I first went to that shop, I was very nervous, very shy, didn't really know what I was doing, like to go into that like really warm, really gentle, really nurturing environment, which is strange to talk about a vintage shop and describe it as really like warm and nurturing, but it is. It really, really felt like that for me. I mean, I've literally gone into Jenny Vander like when I've had my heart broken, when I've, you know, not gotten an audition that I wanted, when, you know, a pitch hasn't worked, you know, and I've gone in sort of licking my wounds. And because I suppose Marion is someone who really, I think she really believes in young women, and I think she really wants to give young women like confidence. And so whenever I've gone in, she's just, I suppose whatever is going wrong, you know, she'll just say the loveliest, kindest things to me. And sometimes you actually just need that, you know, or it's someone to put things into perspective, like, okay, you haven't gotten that, but you'll get something else. And, you know, you need to keep going and don't give up. And these sound like cliches, but when you're in the middle of something, these are not cliches. These are actually like lifelines, and they're really, really nice things to be said to you. I was dealing with a very, very sick relative, my dad, and I would go back to Dublin. And I think it was very clear that there was kind of a tension within me. You know, I was going through quite a difficult time. And so even with that level of, you know, stuff going on, Marion was there for me, and I could discuss that, even though she may not have seen me for like 6 months. But we would just like launch into, you know, conversations about that. And that was a huge source of comfort, I have to say. I was brave enough to try, anything I wanted on. And Marion was quite, you know, she was like, try it on, like put it on, you know. But it was great because it was like, you can put it on. You know, you see that beautiful dress that's from the 50s or the 60s, and you look at it and you think that's a version of elegance that you have no handle on. But then there's a great moment where you reach for it and you take it off the hanger and you put it on, and then you realise, no, this idea of elegance is not something that belongs to another woman in another time and another place, that it can belong to you there and then. Which is a really nice thing to learn as a young woman, I think, you know, that it's not always in this idea of elegance or style is not intangible. Like you can make it happen. You can buy it. But when I go to Dublin now, within, you know, 2 or 3 hours, I need to go to Jenny Vander and I need to see Marion. And it's like an impulse. And I always feel like, you know, I need to fill her in what I'm doing. And, you know, I need to fill her in about the good things and the bad things. And like the source, she has become such a source of incredible advice for me over the years.
You can follow Anne Maria on Instagram at Anne Maria McCarthy, which is A-N-N Maria McCarthy, M-C-C-A-R-T-H-Y.
Maybe it wasn't winter. I think it might have been September. Oh, I just don't know. Literally, I think I blocked out of my mind because I really don't like thinking about what I did. I wore a really simple black dress and some saltwater sandals because I didn't want to fall over. I didn't want to be in a tight dress I couldn't get out of or might spill out of or anything. And you see girls on their high bar stools pulling their skirts down and like falling off in their heels and stuff like that, which I can't be bothered with. It's actually Becca's dress, my housemate, and I hadn't worn it before, so I just wanted something really plain, and it was just this black dress that's kind of baggy, so I went for that. I'd watched episodes, but I didn't really think that anyone on it wore the same sort of clothes as me, really. They were all kind of actual date outfits, whereas mine was just maybe what I'd normally wear. I remember there were loads of tweets about me not wearing enough makeup and not making an effort and stuff like that, and I didn't really care. I kind of maybe should have thought about being on television. You and under a lot of lights, because as a photographer, I see people under a lot of lights sometimes and see that their skin looks different. But I didn't think I was probably wearing like foundation, but not much else. I wasn't really anxious about visually. I didn't really think about whether my outfit was flattering or my face. I just was kind of more anxious about the whole situation rather than that. I kind of forgot about that bit of it. He was wearing an awful outfit, no offense him. He was wearing high top Vans, which were undone kind of about three holes up, so they were flapping loose, like the tongue was just hanging over. And he was wearing black skinny jeans and a white shirt, potentially some sort of leather braces, or there were braces, and then a leather necklace with a skull clasp. Yeah, I think I remember more about his outfit than mine. I think when I saw the shoes, I was like, no, no, not for me. It felt quite weird to watch it. My mum immediately asked if I was drunk, which I was, because they give you wine before you go on. And my mum was just like, Sophie, the camera doesn't do anything for you. Okay, thanks, mum. And yeah, it was quite weird seeing how it was edited to be quite a different thing from my experience. I'd wear more makeup if I was going to do it again. Maybe I'd even go to like a shop and get it done. But that's it, really. I probably wouldn't wear such a like dirty old coat. I felt bad handing it over to Fred. I think on any date since, it's been the same outfit that I've worn. I wear the same outfit. I've got this really old Margaret Howe t-shirt that's quite baggy, and then some like black trousers or jeans that are also probably a bit baggy. Yeah, my pulling outfit. Big baggy clothes. Yeah.
Follow Sophie on Instagram at Sophie E. Davidson. And also you can subscribe to her very brilliant tiny letter, which is called Women Cook For Me.
Truthfully, I get quite nervous watching that television programme sometimes, because some of the people who go on it will wear extremely high heels or dresses that look really uncomfortable, and then they kind of have to perch on these high stools and wait for this really nerve-wracking moment where they meet their blind date. I don't know, if it were me, I would want to be extremely comfortable in what I was wearing in that moment. So maybe we're talking about pyjamas, you know?
Well, like a kind of chic pyjama suit.
I would hope it would be chic. But I'm not making
genuine
any promise.
Pajamas.
It's been a long time since I've been on a first date, I would say. So it's not a bridge I have to cross right now, hopefully.
Yeah, I think it's very tricky to dress for one. But I think that for me as well, comfort is crucial. But then again, it is very different being on television.
Yes.
To just sidling up in a pub and wearing a pair of trainers.
Yes.
So we both agreed today that we were going to wear something that we usually receive a lot of compliments mm-hmm. about. So what's the thing that you're wearing right now?
I'm wearing some earrings that are kind of metal disc shapes, and they have a face on them. And the face is quite striking and bold. It's got the faces cut into the metal, and it's like a woman's face with a large mouth and then dramatic squiggles of hair over one eye.
Really nice.
They're quite striking, and people seem to really connect with them when I wear them. Partially, I think, because face earrings are a little bit trendy at the moment. And partially, I don't know, I think people often do connect with other people's jewellery. There's like an emotional impact to it sometimes. So I do like wearing them. And they're on a loan from my mother, who I think bought them in the 1980s. Yeah, it's kind of funny that they've become quite fashionable again now, so many years later.
They make me think of a pair of earrings that maybe like a painter would have worn in the 60s or something.
Fab.
Yeah, they're really nice. And they're very large, but they're not... Because there's so many big earrings around at the moment that I always worry that they would wear me rather than me wearing them. But they're really suit you.
Well, they used to be very silvery, I think, and the silver has kind of faded and come off in some parts, so they're kind of bronze now. I like them.
Yeah.
They're kind of subtle at the same time, I
think. Yeah, totally.
Tell me about the skirt you're wearing, Stevie.
So this skirt is a silver leather mini skirt that I bought about 3 years ago from And Other Stories. I really love it, and it's one of those items in my wardrobe that people very often compliment me on. Yeah, and I realised this morning that this is the skirt that I wore on my last first date, which was about a year and a half ago. Actually, I wore this silver skirt with the t-shirt that we both own from Weekday, the patriarchy slogan.
Yeah. Women need more sleep than men because they're busy fighting the patriarchy.
Because fighting the patriarchy is exhausting. Yep. So I kind of wore that as a, I think, a little bit of a test and just a pair of Reebok trainers. And I felt really comfortable.
And that seems to be key.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You can't impress anyone if you don't feel comfortable.
Yeah, and I think that in those scenarios, I think it's really important to feel like yourself, because I think
absolutely.
On a date you need to be yourself, otherwise you're just setting yourself up to fail.
I agree. So in December, I went to my 10-year school reunion, which was a bit of a thrill. Beforehand, I had dinner and got ready with my two best friends, which was a lot like when we were teenagers and we're getting ready for the local disco or for some kind of forbidden house party. So here are my friends, Tess and Laura, and I discussing what has changed in our makeup bags over those 10 years.
A lot of the makeup that I used to wear was actually guided by the makeup that you used to wear.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think, like, you were very on trend at the time and you knew what the good stuff was. Like, I think you always kind of directed, you certainly directed me in, you know, like, Benefit mascara.
I loved Benefit.
Yeah, which is good. Yeah. But it's expensive.
We had disposable income with that.
Or I know, yeah.
Pocket money. I feel like, and we spent it on makeup. Like, because what else would we spend it on when we were 15 or 16?
Yeah. I used to buy very expensive foundations. Like,
yes.
There was like a Dior one that was like a spray. Because I had nothing else to spend my money on. But I still had acne.
Yeah.
How far is...
I had acne. And we used to wear that Foot MAC full coverage, which is like tar on your skin.
It's for drag queens.
And it's for covering scars and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and that was just normal.
But that was... Every girl in our class wanted to wear that or had it.
Yeah.
Like, I remember girls in our class putting that on before they'd leave school.
Yeah.
Like, just in the off chance that they'd go by the boys' schools and stuff.
Oh, my God.
And they'd look ridiculous. They'd look caked on, but we didn't really know any better at the time.
It was the style. The style was to be caked on.
Yeah.
It was to look like you were wearing makeup. That was the...
Yeah,
a lot of
definitely.
Makeup. Yeah. I remember someone being, like, trying to buy MAC full coverage, and the MAC sales assistants were like, no. I'm not going to sell this to you because you're 16 and your skin is actually fine. And then they want to buy it. How you do your makeup now differ from when you were a teenager?
Hugely. Sure. Like
how?
So my eyes are my biggest difference. I used to wear I still wear heavy eyeliner, but I wore it down in the inside of my eye, the way that a cat's eye, like to mimic a cat's eye, and had a big flick out the side that's bigger than I probably wear now. I also... Like every time I went out, I would wear very, very bright kind of eyeshadow or eyeliner, very like blues and greens and purples. It was my thing, but I grew out of it. I think that it would look ridiculous now, but I thought it looked nice.
You're really good at eye makeup now.
Yeah,
like what you're wearing right now looks amazing, really suits you.
I think the big difference is the Kohl pencil people used to wear.
Yeah.
Like the black eyeliner.
I used to wear Kohl on the inside of my eyeliner.
I really liked it. And frankly, like, I don't think there was a day that I looked in the mirror and was like, I don't like this anymore. It just, like, it stopped being
liquid
a thing.
Eyeliner became...
Liquid eyeliner did become
wing.
That thing.
Yeah.
And then I remember buying a black eyeliner recently and like a cheap one in Topshop and like doing that again just to see what it looked like. And I was like, this just looks very different. So maybe you should get the MAC one out of...
The MAC one was really thick. Really thick and like went that, on. Like you didn't have to keep on going.
The MAC one was amazing.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm always like for about an hour I'm like I look beautiful in French and then it just like falls down. You have to redo it. Like because your eye is wet. That's
you used to
thing.
Always have like just gunk under your eyes.
I remember
yeah,
being
and
Irish
and
college.
It collected in the
yeah
in the
yeah
inside
yeah.
Your
yeah.
Eyes,
so. I remember being Irish college and one of the older girls told me that you like burn it with a mask.
Yeah, you told me that.
Yeah, and then it like really stays on. But it's like burnt color you're rubbing on your eye.
Makeup was more fun. I think that's like the big difference for me. I don't wear a huge amount of makeup and I don't wear it that often, but I just remember it used to be so much fun and so like collaborative.
And
like people would teach you things that you didn't like, just their ability to do something different, you were like that is amazing.
Yeah,
and I think that's kind of lost now because like there's so many like tutorials and stuff, whereas like I remember reading the back of like a No. 7 palette and it would be like you coat this bit here and like following it like a Bible whereas now it's like you actually have people to teach you how to do these things.
I have probably I get my eyebrows threaded now and I never plucked my eyebrows or did anything when I was a teenager.
They look great.
So that's thank you. There's a bit of a difference.
I've never got any hair on my face removed.
Really?
Never. I don't really pluck my eyebrows at all. I probably wouldn't have plucked them in the past 2 years. When I was a teenager, I plucked them a lot. And now I just let them go.
I get my eyebrows threaded. And recently in like the lighting in the bathroom, I think I need to start getting my lip done. I feel like I have dark whiskers, and it's only in certain lighting I see it. But I'm like, if I start,
I don't think you. Yeah, I mean, but I don't. So but that's the point. It's only in certain lighting.
Yeah, so. But if so, it's in lighting that you see every day.
I've been bleaching mine once a month ish since I was 16, which is like the most regular upkeep I've done on any part of me. I also wear lipstick now, which I never did when I was a teenager. But nobody lipstick. Wore lipstick. Yeah, that's true.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
They used to put foundation on their lips.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had very wonky teeth, so I never wanted to focus. I always wanted to draw attention to my eyes.
And then you got braces.
And then I got braces. So I like wearing a bit of lippy, but I don't wear it terribly.
Yeah, you like not the eyes more than the lips.
Hi, I'm Naomi Shimada, and I'm a model, writer, and I make films. And I'm a human at large. That's what we've been trying to find a new description for me. And my life is always kind of on the road, but the road is also my life. I had a special encounter with a woman whose name was Maria Inez. She's a 78-year-old woman from Buenos Aires, and she was traveling alone, as was I, and we were trying to visit the Cataratas de Iguazu, what they call in Argentina, which is the Iguazu waterfalls, which is the biggest waterfalls in the world. So I was in Argentina for work and decided to spend an extra couple of days there. So I was staying at this hotel by myself, and there's a what they call a colectivo, which is like a bus that people flag down and get on. And I was waiting for it forever, and it just didn't come. And there was an older woman there waiting too, and this taxi driver approached us and was like, "Do you guys just want to ride? I'll give you this. If you come, the two of you, you can pay the same price that you would have paid taking the bus." And we're like, "Sure." She was like, "Are you down?" She was like, "I also need toothpaste." And I was like, "I don't have toothpaste. I'm really sorry." I was like, "But I'll help you find some." She's like, "I didn't get to brush my teeth today." I was like, "I hate that." This place is just so beautiful. Even if you weren't going to see the actual waterfalls, the jungle is unlike anything I've ever seen before. It's so rich and so green and bursting with life, and it's spring right now, so there are just thousands of butterflies everywhere. Argentinians have like a very particular accent, especially if they're from Buenos Aires, but her tones were, it's really harsh, and her vowels were so much like rounder, and she spoke slow with this like rich, rich voice. And she was just telling me that, you know, this was a rite of passage, kind of coming here, and this was like the third time in her life she had come, and she didn't know if she'd be able to come again, so she wanted to come now. And she just kept repeating to me, like, "It's so good you've come here. It's so good you've come here. Like, this is something you have to do once in your life." And she was totally right. Kind of decided going in, walking in, that we would just stay together. Actually, it was so nice to be able to do it with her. Like, we both needed each other in a way. Like, she was fine walking, but gets tired, and also like there's steps and slippery bits, and you know, so there were moments where like I caught her and she might have fallen over, or you know. And for me, it was just nice to be able to, I've grown up really far away from all my maternal grandmothers, and sometimes I feel like I've missed such big chunks. I most often travel by myself. I always have these really magical moments with older women, and it's like the universe knows that that's what I miss. I feel like our society is so obsessed with youth, and actually young, like being really young isn't interesting to me. I think there's so much richer depth of things that we can learn from older people, but we just cancel them out. I was wearing an outfit and got completely soaked. Like, completely soaked. She was wearing, like, a cotton floral shirt and a hat. And I was wearing a neon yellow bikini. And I don't know, I had a yellow t-shirt and denim shorts. And then I also suddenly got my period. So, like, I, like, bled through my shorts. And I was like, oh my fucking God, like, this is, like, the worst day for this. And she, like, was, like, made me a little skirt out of her, like, rain waterproof jacket that she was, like, carrying with her. And she was, like, don't worry about it. So then I just, like, walked around in my bikini because, like, I had, like, bikini bottoms in my bag. Who knows why I didn't just put my bikini on for the fucking waterfall incident. And then, so we were, like, real gals on the road. She was, like, in the bathroom with me while I was, like, trying to, like, scrub my shorts out. And then she was just, like... She's like, don't worry about it. But then, like, no one there was dressed in swimwear. Like, Argentinians are quite conservative. So everyone was looking at me, but she didn't care. She totally understood everything I was talking about and felt the same way about so many of the things that I was discussing, or, you know, just even say with my work, where it's been focused on improving, like, female body image over the years. Like, that's a big problem in Argentina, and she told me a lot about it, how it's a kind of the after effects of colonization, really, where they're following very what they think European white imperialist beauty ideals are, you know, but then they really think of themselves more as European than Latin American, which is extremely problematic to me. Also about dating in our society, I was explaining to her how, like, I never meet people that I'm not interested in. I just don't think, I'm just less realistic about monogamy and lasting relationships, and, you know, more into the idea of, like, community parenting, or, you know, just, like, things that she was like, don't change for other people, don't change for a man, like, also don't be in a rush, which I think is something I tell myself a lot, but was, like, nice to hear from someone else. If an 80-year-old woman tells you that, then she's like, things change. That is life. Like, you know, it's not this, like, carbon copy life that we should all be living. And she's like, that's not living. And we talked a lot about having children, and she was like, you know, if you feel like you want to have children, like, you should have them, like, whether you find, the like, a long-term partner or not. She was like, don't deny yourself the richness of having a child, which I think, like, I think in our society, we're often told, we're made to feel like we have to find that perfect person to settle down with. And, like, maybe you're not going to find that. And she was like, having a child is the best thing that ever happened to me. Having a grandchild is the best thing that ever happened to me. She was just like, you know, like, you'll never love anything like your own child. And, like, it's almost like looked down upon to speak like that, in our, like, you know, to be just like, to speak about love in a really pure way is, like, not cool. But, you know, capitalism has made love very, like, uncool, you know, because, of course, if you're feeling loved, you don't feel the need to constantly buy things, right? That's how it works. So I feel like talking about love, like, how good it is to be in love and be loved and give love and all those things, like, I feel like we don't talk about that enough.
What a great story. Obviously, you can find Naomi on Instagram at Naomi Shimada. Or maybe you follow her already.
I really love how she wears colour.
Absolutely.
She was wearing, I think, like, a bright orange jumper when we were visiting her. And
something yellow as well.
Yeah, yeah. She's very good at blocking lots of similar colours.
Inspiring.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for listening. We'll be posting images from this episode all week on our Instagram account. You can follow us. It's layers.podcast. Production comes from Lucy Dearlove. And please rate us on Apple Podcasts. It really makes a difference. And if you like it, tell a friend about Layers too.
Our next episode is all about movement. Think travel, dancing, or how an item of clothing hangs as you move. If you have anything to say about the subject, why not tweet us at Layers Podcast, or drop us a line at layerspodcast@gmail.com.
We'll leave you with another installment of Loved and Lost, our regular spot for stories about items that went astray. This one is from Osman Ahmed, Osman is a fashion journalist, and you can follow him on Twitter at Osman_Ahmed.
I love parsis. By the time I was old enough to dictate my own evenings, I'd caught what Andy Warhol called a social disease, a voracious appetite for people, places, and pillow talk. So it was much to my delight that one of my first reporting jobs was on the party desk, or as it's officially called, the diary desk, of a prestigious newspaper. It was a unique gig, starting early in the morning, often with a pop of champagne at the desk, at home by lunchtime for a restorative nap, and out on the town by cocktail hour. I couldn't have been more thrilled. In my mind, I was following in the footsteps of Evelyn Waugh, even though, deep down, what I really wanted was to be on the features desk, cutting my teeth writing profiles of movers and shakers, think pieces about style, film and theatre. For now, though, I was content to drink well and for free and survive on London's finest canapes. Soon, the time came for a big party, not just another book launch or a seat in Siberia at a monotonous gala fundraiser. It was a centenary party for the paper itself, with all the city's great and good. In my neomaniac naivety, I knew what it required, a new outfit, something to say I've arrived. Vintage wouldn't cut it, neither would my jaunty rags of my time at St. Martin's. The lunchtime before the big day, I charged down Kensington High Street, desperate for something that looked more expensive than my reporter's wage. Stopped in my tracks at a shop window, a crisp, abbreviated white suit caught my eye. It was the first time a window mannequin sold something to me so instantaneously, and perhaps in a flight of fancy, I indulged the movie montage-like sequence. I went in, found the suit, tried it on, and voila, it was perfect. I felt like Gatsby, perhaps even like J-Lo in Made in Manhattan, and the decadent prospect of a brilliant white suit was opposite to my fancy. I wanted to look like someone with a driver, who didn't get the Victoria line, have pimples, or wear mismatched socks, someone who could wear white to a party and leave with it still glistening. I wore it with black Chelsea boots that I polished the day off. I felt fantastic. At the party, I shined and soaked up the moment, as well as about a dozen glasses of champagne. I worked the room and even met the new mayor, had serious conversations with a handful of influential types and some deeply superficial ones with the glitterati. The illustrious party photographer Dave Bennett even took my picture, and in that flash of a bulb I imagined the glossy magazine pages of party collages that I often scanned like an X-ray. Miss V, ES Magazine, Bystander! It was all going to plan. When my editor put me in a cab to the after-party at the Groucho, I was buzzing. For all I knew, I'd meet Kate Moss and become fast friends. And why not? My suit had served me well so far. After several rounds of lethal cocktails, the bills for which I'd conveniently evaded, I was sandwiched beside the features director of the paper, the woman I wanted to work for. We got on like a house on fire. Then, with a drunken swoop of her arm came the fatal blow. Her large glass of red wine fell all over me, not a drop left in the glass. I was bleeding, hemorrhaging in a state of disbelief. Before I knew it, she had poured salt on the wound, literally salt all over my suit. My face must have paled, because within seconds I was surrounded by colleagues patting me down. It was almost as though I had been shot, and I had! My buzz was killed, although I stayed on to the end of the night. The perpetrator, in all her seniority, promised that I could expense the suits, something that was much less feasible in the sober light of day. I tried to get it dry cleaned, but the man at the dry cleaners just looked at me with pity. He did his best, and I contemplated dyeing it pink, but the sinister stain was too much to bear, and the knife pleats and crisp starch had lost their luster. I deposited it at a clothes bank and never looked back. Years later, I witnessed as a Giacometti-like model passed me on the Grace Wells Bonner catwalk in a double-breasted white suit just like mine. By this time, I had eased my hedonism and come to peace with my green social ambitions. As much as my heart lusts after it in that very moment, I knew well enough to know that I love parties far too much for such a demanding garment. And I'm okay with that.